So you laughed at that, but there probably isn't a lady here that's probably in her mid to late 40s to early 50s that hasn't tried that spin to see if it'll work for you. It was just one of those things from my era, and when they were reintroducing Wonder Woman, that spin, they actually tried to figure out how to work that into the new Wonder Woman, but they kind of set that aside. And as you listen to that clip, you're thinking, oh my gosh, they just gave Barry a sermon outline. I mean, look at what we've got. We've got, what, the magic bracelets that can deflect bullets. We've got an outfit with a belt of strength, and we've got a lasso that forces truth and forgetfulness. And then we've got a magic tiara with a special ruby that she can call home to her parent whenever she needs. This is like tailor-made for me, right? Unfortunately, that's not where we're going. That would be a great sermon, and maybe someday we'll come back and preach something more like an armor of God off of this, but that's not what we want to talk about this morning. But I do want to point out to you that all of those things had one thing in common. They were gifts. They were gifts from Mom. They were the things that Mom was giving her daughter in order to go into the outside world. Did you catch that? Because that was a difference in the variation of this version of Wonder Woman. In the outside world, without those gifts, she was just ordinary. She needed those gifts from her parent to be able to do what she was going to have to do in the outside world. And I think that's important for us to remember that that's a lot of times what moms spend their time doing. Sometimes we don't understand the gifts when they give them to us, but this is a giving mom and the fact that she is giving us the things that we need to go out into the world and make a difference. And I think about the ladies in our lives that so oftentimes they're the ones that are the spiritual leaders. They're the ones that bring people back to church. They're the ones that keep things on track. And we need to remember they're giving us a gift. They're giving us those same gifts that on the outside world, it means something to us. So this morning we're going to talk about a mom that had to endure some sincere hardship in order to give her child some gifts, a better life than what she had. And her name is Hagar. And if you say who, I'm not surprised because she doesn't appear but in a couple of chapters in the Bible. And we're going to talk about her story, but I got to give you this. I sent this out in the email because I wanted everybody to make sure that they saw this. This is not the warning that this sermon may be offensive to some like we gave in the zoo when we went through it. This is a warning because this sermon is, I would definitely count it a PG-13 sermon. You can't do this story without going into some very adult themes and some very troubling themes. The other side of the warning is usually when we tell this story from the perspective of a guy named Abraham and a lady named Sarah, and we tell that story from their perspective. And when you tell it from their perspective, it doesn't sound the same as when you tell it from Hagar's perspective, because as this story begins to unfold, it may change your opinion some of Abraham and Sarah. Because this story goes to what I would call a very disturbing moment in Scripture. Hagar is a woman. And she's a woman that struggled greatly with, quite honestly, people that were supposed to be doing the right thing for God. Her story is found in Genesis chapter 16. So that would be the first book of the Bible. You don't have to go very far. But if you want to pick up the Scripture and follow along, you can. But this is who she is. Now Sarai and Abram, now they will get their names changed later, Sarai and Abram's wife had borne him no children. But she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her." Abram agreed with what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan for 10 years, Sarai his wife took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. Now, in case you're confused about where we are in the story, this is the story of Abraham and Sarah, which will eventually produce Isaac, which will eventually produce the nation that becomes Israel. And remember, God had made promises to Abram, soon to be Abraham, that he would create a great nation through him. Now, if I'm going to create a great nation, I'm going to have a lot of offspring, you realize where it's got to start. It's got to start with one, right? And so 10 years had passed, and there was no heir. So they've been living in this land, and Abraham had been following God and doing what God said. And God has said, I'm going to make you a nation. I'm going to make you a nation. I'm going to make you a nation. You're going to have a lot of offspring. And God's like, and Abraham's like, I don't even have one. God, you're falling down on the job here because I can't be a nation unless you give me an heir. And so as we tend to do, sometimes we decide to help God's plans out. And so what Sarai did is she said, I got an idea how to fix the problem. Obviously, God's got this all messed up because I don't can't produce any children for some reason. And since he said it's going to come through you, Abram, and so he doesn't really need me. You just need somebody to give you a child. And so I have a solution. Enter Hagar. She's put in this situation that, well, quite honestly, Hagar was a slave. She was a slave of Sarai. I don't know whether or not Abram even realized who she was, but you do understand that she was a slave, and they said she was an Egyptian slave. Now, that's important because there in the scripture, there is this idea of what they called an indentured servant or a bond slave, somebody that willingly sells themselves into slavery because they don't have money to live, and so they choose to be a slave. But since they labeled her as an Egyptian slave, then you get the fact that she was purchased. Probably purchased, if you go back in scripture a little ways to Genesis chapter 12, you'll find that where they made an excursion into Egypt, they probably picked her up along the trail. So that means she was probably purchased to be a slave after Abraham got the call to be God's chosen person. That blows my mind sometimes. But she's a purchased slave, and she was not a voluntary slave. This isn't what Hagar chose for her life. And, well, the fact that Sarah describes her and her to her husband probably meant they had other slaves. So Abram was a slave owner. And this is a big deal in our society today. And I just want to go ahead and point out in the culture that the Bible was written, slavery was quite frequent. This idea of buying and selling people in slavery was something that they did a lot. And I just want to go on record as saying that not everything in the Bible does God say is okay. People did a lot of things in the Bible that God didn't have use for, and slavery was not one of them. He allowed slavery for a reason, but slavery was not what God had actually wanted for his people. He wanted everybody to have choice and freedom. Hence the reason he gave everybody free will to choose your life. But this slave is important because she goes on to become Abram's second wife. Now, here's my other problem, is the fact that how many wives are you supposed to have? One. Okay, so now he's going to have a second wife. So now we have two adult issues. We have slavery, and now we have polygamy. And remember, this is the guy that God chose to be the chosen person to produce the nation that would eventually produce Jesus. And this gets very confusing, but we're not even to the dark part of the story yet. Because this was a truly horrible plan that she came up with. And you're probably thinking, well, no kidding. Well, but I want you to notice the plan as Sarai put it out. First thing, she gave no voice to God. Don't you find it funny they didn't pray about this? They didn't ask God if this was a good idea. Nobody circulated this through God. When Sarah brought it to Abram, he didn't say, well, let's go check with God and see if he's okay with this idea. Because if they went and checked this idea with God, what do you think God would have said? No. Isn't it funny how when we have really bad ideas, we never want to clear them with God first? When we have really bad ideas, we want to ask for forgiveness rather than permission, right? Because permission is difficult. So God was given no voice in this situation. Abram and Sarah made this plan up all by themselves, and they executed it all by themselves. But as you read through the story, I want you to notice who else's voice is missing. Hagar. Hagar doesn't get a voice either. So you get what that means. Hagar, being a slave, is being forced into this situation. She has no choice whatsoever. Usually when we tell this story, we kind of make it look like Hagar is a surrogate mom or something like that. Or they went to her and made this proposal to her and said, hey, this is what we're thinking. Are you okay with this? And she said, sure. You understand? She gets no choice. She's going to be forced into having sex with her master and becoming his wife. No choice. You're going to be the wife of this man whether you like it or not. You have to do this. She is going to be forced into continuing to have sex until she becomes pregnant. Oh my gosh. So we have a slave that's being used to produce a child. We have a term for that in our culture today. We wouldn't be counting Abraham and Sarah a hero. Where would we be putting them? In prison. Okay? Because this is not what we do in our culture. And then, to go on top of that, she's going to be forced into carrying the baby that was not to be hers. So when the baby is born, the baby's going to get taken from her. She's not going to be able to have any part in the baby's life. This is a horrible idea. This is terrible. Why would God choose this kind of a situation for anybody? But you have to understand, this is where we find Hagar. And her story is important because, well, all of us have gone through difficult situations in our life. If we go back, some of us have probably dealt with things in our past where somebody in authority abused or used us. We've all got those things in our life that we wish were different. And then we begin to ask the question, where's God? I mean, God really? Shouldn't this have just invalidated Abraham and Sarah? Now, in case you think, well, I'm tainting the story a little bit, I want you to take a look at Hagar's feelings when she finds out she's pregnant. So she's been forced to do this, and now it says, when she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. You think? So when it finally comes back that Hagar is going to have this child, Hagar begins to change. Now, I did a lot of research into this because there's a lot of debate about what this means. Some commentaries point to the fact that Hagar's overall dissatisfaction in the way that she became pregnant. I guarantee you that when she looked at Sarai, who was using her for a housemaid, basically somebody to clean the house, and all of a sudden Sarai sold her into this position, I guarantee you when she looked at her, there was some hard feelings, some animosity, she despised her. She didn't like her very much. Now, other commentaries point to the fact that Hagar, being jealous, wanted to replace Sarah. Well, I don't really get that, but perhaps. But, you know, this is where we kind of try to sugarcoat this. Yeah, well, Hagar just had problems because she wanted to be the main woman. You understand. She's been forced into this situation. She never wanted Abram as a wife, as a husband. And then the others point out to the fact that Hagar no longer saw herself as a slave. You know what? I agree with her, because after what you've been through, you don't get to be called a slave anymore. You get to be put in someplace prized and then placed someplace out there. And here's the thing. You think we're to the darkest part of the story. Guess what? We're not even there yet. Because it goes a little downhill from there. Because as she begins to act out, Sarah goes to Abram to complain. And I want you to listen straight out of the mouth of Abram, his attitude toward Hagar. So Sarah has gone and complained. Hagar's not cooperating. Whatever she's doing is not satisfactory. And so she goes and complains, and this is what Abram tells his wife. Your slave, really? Not my wife, or my other wife, or my expecting wife. Your slave is in your hands, Abram said. Do with her whatever you think best. Then Sarah mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. Now, let me translate that into some modern terms for you. To Abraham and Sarah, she was still just a slave. Nothing had changed. They still just saw her as just a slave. She had no value as a person whatsoever. They didn't look at the situation and say, okay, well, she's pregnant, and at least now we're going to acknowledge that she's a person. She's just a piece of property. That's got to bother us. Even the fact that she was pregnant mattered little. I mean, what did Abram say? Well, she's your slave. If you don't like her, you do what you want. You realize he gave her carte blanche there. You don't like her? Kill her. She's just a slave. We can find somebody else to make another baby. She's just a piece of property. I mean, she's not all that important. And I look at Hagar and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what is God thinking? But Sarah didn't kill her. It says she mistreated her. When you pull that word apart, there is no other way to put this. She beat the pregnant lady. She began to abuse Hagar. So now we've got somebody that basically purchased somebody into slavery, and then forced her to have marital sexual relations with, to the point they became pregnant, and now when she's not operating the way they wanted to operate, now they're going to beat her. And like I told you, there are no heroes in the Bible. There are just a lot of broken people that God figures out a way how to use. And so when I look at this story, I come back to the same question. Where is God? Because Hagar decides, I'm getting out of here. I'm checking out. It says she ran, and would you blame her? Wouldn't you do the same? If you were living in a situation where you're being forced into a marital relationship, and you're now being physically abused, would you not also run? Count me in. I'm checking out the next train or next place I can get out of here. I'm leaving. I'm going to get out of this situation. So Hagar ran, and she ran out into, remember, they're living in Canaan. This isn't like America. She's not like running down the street and, you know, there's a supermarket on every corner and it's all an easy thing. She's literally running out into the desert. I mean, there's nothing out there. They're in Canaan. We've all seen the pictures of the Arab nations. When you go very far from the main cities, it's just desert. So she's running out into the desert, and as we continue to tell the story, finally, when we get to verse 7, God shows up. And I know what I'm expecting, right? God's going to show up, and he's going to fix everything. Man, he's going to land blast Abraham and Sarah, and he's going to basically validate all of this, and it's all going to be okay, and this is going to be the Disney princess story that everybody lives happily ever after. This is where this story gets just a little bit harder. So let's read the story, and then we're going to come back and take a look at it. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road of Shur. And he said, Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai said. She answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. The angel added, I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count. The angel of the Lord also said to her, you are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son and you shall name him Ishmael. For the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man, and his hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. He will live in the hostility toward all of his brothers. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are my God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. And like I said, we need to look at this because this is hard. This is adult. We need to understand exactly what's going on here because this is a situation none of us would condone. Am I agreed? None of us would say we're okay with what Abraham and Sarah did, and neither did God. I just want to make sure you understand that. But let's pull the story apart. And in the greeting, I'm sure when the angel showed up, Hagar must have been upset. It was a disturbing greeting because what did God call her? Slave. He said, Hagar, slave. I mean, he couldn't even say, Hagar, pregnant lady, or Hagar, just stop there. You didn't have to, but you understand what God is doing here when he says, hey, Hagar, slave of Sarai. The greeting is not meant to down Hagar, but to show God knows the situation. What did he say? I have seen your misery. Hagar, I know where you are. I know what you've been through. I know what's going on. I'm not basically checked out on the situation. I know everything that's happened. So you and I need to understand what's going on behind the scenes, Hagar. And then he begins to ask the question, where have you come from and where are you going? Now, to me, that sounds like God really doesn't understand what's going on, but you get for the first time what's about to happen, right? For the very first time, God gave her a voice. The back part of this story, God is the first individual that's willing to listen to Hagar's story. He didn't go to Abram and Sarai and say, what are you guys doing? What do you think? Tell me the story, because they would have probably been like Adam and Eve. They just made up a story that makes you look good, right? Well, God, we were just trying to do your will and help you out as best we could. Well, Lord, if you had provided us the child when we wanted it, then we wouldn't have had to go on to these extremes. Well, God, this is really your problem, because you know what? You're the one that made the promise. If you hadn't put all this pressure on us, then they would have come up with some kind of a way to tell the story to make it look good for them. So God goes to the person that's been downtrodden. He says, you know what? Tell me your story. Tell me your past. Tell me where you came from. Tell me, how is it you came to be sitting in this desert, at this spring, at this moment, pregnant, in the middle of nowhere, with your life in danger? How is it that you got here? And I don't think we probably have what Hagar said exactly, because I got a feeling it was a very long story. Maybe even has some language that we don't want to mention in church. I got a feeling she had a very long list of complaints to air before God. Could you blame her? I mean, I believe I would admit, well, where were you like 9 months ago when all of this was happening? Where were you in Egypt when they were buying me? Now you show up? I got a feeling in her past, she talked a lot about all of the things that shouldn't have happened to her life. And he says, tell me your plan. Where are you going? I mean, okay, you probably did a smart thing in the fact that you ran, but did you make a plan past that? Think about that for a second. A lot of times we get ourselves in difficult situations and our only thing that we're thinking about is, how do I get out? The plan isn't fully thought out as far as, well, what comes next? And sometimes that's the only thing you can do. Sometimes the situation is to the point, the only thing you can do is get out. And that's okay. But now God is here and he says, okay, so Hagar, what are we going to do next? And I got this sneaking suspicion that Hagar got a little quiet at that point, because really, what were her options? She was a young pregnant lady. And by the way, the fact that she was a housemaid for a person probably meant that we were probably dealing with not somebody we usually picture her in the movies as being like a 20 or 30 year old. She was a housemaid. The 20 or 30 year old ladies would have been put out in the field. You know who usually were the housemaids? She's probably a teenager. Probably 16, 17 max. So we have a young pregnant woman in the middle of nowhere, far from home, with no relatives, and she's got to make some decisions about her life. Man, this is hard. I mean, God should just like build her a city right there, right? Well, he doesn't build her a city, but he begins to talk to her, and he gives her some instructions, and he gives her a choice. I don't know that I would have been very happy about these instructions. He says, go back to your mistress and submit to her. Now, I got to be honest with you. I would have looked at God and said, go back to the crazy situation? You want me to go back to that? God, do you really think, did you not hear the story? You said you knew the misery I was in. Go back to that. I don't think so, God. I believe God and I would have had a very long conversation, because he's asking her to go back to the very situation that's basically ruined her life. And the thing is when he says go back to being mistreated? No, that's not what he's telling her. What does he tell her? He says, go back, and he asked her to change her mentality. And he used this word submit. That's a hard word. Submit to, well, God, the last time I submitted to them, this didn't end so well, Lord. God, the last time I submitted to them, bad things happened. Of course, God is going to change the narrative here, because God is going to send her back, and he's going to ask her to change her mentality. And then, if you want to read a few chapters in, God begins to work on Abram and Sarah, and he begins to change them. Hagar becomes the catalyst for changing their way, because this isn't the first episode Abraham and Sarah have had where they took matters into their own hands and did something foolish. But it was the last one. The next one that happened, God used it as a great big lesson for them that changed things. So this would have been a very hard pill for Hagar to swallow, but God knew at that moment it was the safest place for her. Because if she continued in the desert, what's probably going to happen? She's probably going to die of physical needs. At the very best, she's going to run into somebody else who's going to see a beautiful young pregnant lady, and what are they going to think? Man, she'd make a good slave. And she's going to end up right back where she started. It's just now she's going to be not with Abraham and Sarah. She's going to be with somebody else who maybe isn't part of the plan. You see, here's the thing. The situation that she was running from was bad because Abraham and Sarah weren't listening to God. But God said, you do understand. I got you. I have a plan even for this. Even out of this disaster of a horrible plan, I can make good from it. And you know what the sad thing is? Hagar realized it too. As Hagar began to talk about her story, she began to talk about where she was going and what was going to happen to her life, and she began to talk about it and go through it, she probably realized, you know what? That probably is the safest place for me. That probably is the best option I've got at this point. I mean, if I go back and God is who God says He is, and He keeps all the promises He's about to make to me, and then you know what? That situation is at least going to be palatable. If I go out to the middle of the desert and take my life in my own hands, who knows what the next chapter is going to be. So Hagar decides, okay, God, we're going to do it your way. I'll go back and take the role that you're asking me to take. That had to be hard. I could not imagine somebody taking that kind of role. But I'm thankful she did, because there are some great big lessons from it, because God didn't send her back empty-handed. God made some promises to Hagar. And these are big promises, and when we read them, we're thinking, well, that's not much of a promise, so I want to pull these promises apart. And the first thing I want to see, he says, you will have a son. Now, this is a big deal, because you know what sons meant in biblical time, right? Security. Man, this was like better than any retirement plan you've come up with, because you do get the moment she has the son, because when they got Hagar pregnant, it was no guaranteeing that the offspring was going to be a male, right? I mean, it's not like they got to pick. So they could have gotten Hagar pregnant, and she could have had a female, which would not have been a legitimate heir, so they would have had to do it all over again. So God says, you're going to have a son. Hagar, I'm going to offer you the security of a son, because by all rights, Ishmael will have a rightful claim to Abraham's kingdom or property or whatever. Now, we'll talk about that in a minute. But he offers her security. Then he says, about your son, he will be a wild donkey of a man. Now, we don't like that, because we think of wild donkeys as stubborn people, and God's not promising her a stubborn child. He might have been stubborn, I don't know. But the wild donkeys were one thing. They were free. A wild donkey was just that. It had no pen. It came and went as it wanted. So for her son to be free, what is God eventually offering to Hagar? Freedom. He's saying, Hagar, I referenced you as a slave now, but you won't always be a slave. I promise you. Eventually, your son is going to be free. And he's going to take you with him. As a matter of fact, he's going to be so free that I promised Abraham one nation, I'm promising you many nations from this son. He's going to be free. And I'm sure the mom who's looking at her son, that perked up her ears, because isn't that what we all want? We want the best for our kids. I'm willing to endure a little hardship if it means I can better my kid's situation, right? Hagar's mindset begins to change. She's no longer thinking about Hagar. Who's she thinking about? I'm going to be a mom, and I'm going to make the best situation for my kid. I'm going to give him the gifts that he needs. I'm going to give him the gift of security. I'm going to give him the gift of freedom. And then his hands will be against everyone's hands and everyone against him. And again, he's going to be nomadic. Now again, we think that's bad. But this was actually one of those things in biblical times that was actually sought after. People didn't really own properties. They didn't build houses with little white picket fences. They didn't have two dogs and a car and a garage and stuff and boats. The idea behind biblical paradise, you were nomadic. In other words, you packed up your tent and you moved from place to place. And as you went from place to place, you just kind of pitched your tent wherever, and there was your home. It was like camping all the time. I'm glad I didn't live in biblical times. I'm not a camper. But he's promised the idea that, you know what, he's not going to be tied down. Your family lines are going to be vast. Because as they became nomadic and they moved from place to place and they met other people, then the gene pool began to spread and their family got bigger. He's promising something great to Hagar here. And she realizes what God's saying. He will live in hostility toward his brothers. Now again, we think bad. From Hagar's perspective, you do realize this means that his house would not be Abram's house. Eventually, Ishmael would not be recognized as a son of Abraham. He would be his own person. In other words, you're not going to have to live even in the situation I'm sending you back to. This is not forever. This is for now. Until we can get to where we need to be. I need you to go back and do things my way. And that way we can teach some things to Abraham and Sarah. And at the same time, I promise you, I will not forget you. I will not leave you in that situation. I will come back for you. And we will make sure I keep this list of promises. And those are all big promises. And here's the thing. This is where Hagar maybe is a step ahead of us, because Hagar's response, you are the God who sees me. Notice she doesn't talk about, well, you're the God that called me the slave. You're the God that let this happen to me. You're the God that didn't take care of me. You're the God that's making promises you can't fulfill. No, you're the God that sees me. And now I have seen the one that sees me. And Hagar's response, Hagar placed her trust in God's promises. She took God at his word. And when she took God at his word, she did exactly what he asked her to do. And isn't this the essence of faith? In other words, I'm going to do what you asked me to do based off of a promise, not off of something that I have in hand, a promise of future. I'm going to take that and I'm going to put all of my life decisions into that. That's the essence of faith. Interesting enough, Hagar is actually the first person that showed faith like this in Scripture. What a gift to pass on to your kids. She came to the understanding God did not abandon her. He saw her. In this darkest time of her life, she did not say, God, where were you? She said, Lord, I understand now you saw it. And while I don't always understand why I have to go through these difficult times, I do understand now you didn't leave me to go through them by myself. We went through them together. And when I needed you, you showed up. And in the end, this God became her God. That's impressive. She went from being an Egyptian slave to being a child of God. She went from being an outcast to being included. And here's what I want you to realize. Bye, Ava. God sees you. Now, I know sometimes in our situations in our life, in our past, and things that have gone wrong in our life, we think God missed it out. You know, God hit the snooze button on me. God took a vacation during my life. But you do understand, God never moved. God sees you. God sees your life for what it is. And he's just waiting for those opportunities when he can intersect your life. Even in the darkest times. Even in those times when we can't imagine how God could fix this. I'm sure that went through Hagar's mind a million times after she got back to that camp. God, you better not renege on the promises, because I came back here. You better show back up. And God did. Because God sees you. God sees you in your struggles. He sees you in your hurts. And you know what? Even before you got to that point, God already has the promise of who Christ is in your life. You do get that. Even before you got to your darkest point, God had already put the plan of salvation in motion from right here. Now, I'd love to tell you this had a very happy ending for Hagar. And everything was like Disney princess song, and they sung some songs, and everybody was happy. If you turn the pages a few, you're going to find out eventually it all goes south for Hagar again. And eventually they kick her out with a son that's now like a teenager. And they kick mom, but they did kick him out. But at this point, when they kick him back out, God shows back up. And you know what? Just so you know, I'll spoil the end of the story for you. He kept every single one of the promises to the letter. As a matter of fact, Abraham got one nation, the nation of Israel. All the nations around him, you know who they traced their lineage back to? Ishmael. God kept the promise. Isn't that amazing? It took him centuries to do it, but he kept the promise just as he planned. So if he can keep that kind of a promise for Hagar, imagine what he could do for us, as long as we allow God to see us.